Life coaching and discovery. Inspiration with an invitation to learn from a self-discovery guide. Mark is passionate about you making positive changes in your life so that it becomes a vibrant, ongoing journey of growth and discovery. Welcome to the Inspire Possibility Show. Now, here's your host, Mark Susnow.
Hi, everybody. This is Mark Susnow, and you're listening to the show that makes a difference. And our sponsor is InspirePossibility.com, your resource for creating new possibilities in your life. And each week, I have a conversation with people who I consider cutting-edge thought leaders. And this week, I have somebody who I consider in that category. And I want to tell you about him before I introduce him. His name's Robert Clancy. He's a gifted entrepreneur, inspirational speaker, author, and minister. And at 19, Robert had a divine spiritual experience that greatly altered his life. In 2012, he started Robert Clancy Guide to the Soul Facebook fan page, where he shares his divinely inspired thoughts, now followed by over 250,000 people worldwide. Robert is the author of the acclaimed book, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Soul. Robert supports ongoing volunteerism within his business and everyday life. He inspires his team and encourages professional leaders to step up and give back. He is the author of the acclaimed book, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Soul. Now, that title really intrigued me, and I said, okay, I got to ask Robert what he means by that. So welcome, Robert, on the Journey On Show.
Well, thank you for having me. It's truly a pleasure to be here.
And I'm really, as I said, I'm curious, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Soul. Where did that, and that was just one I know of three or four other books you've written. Is that right?
Right. Yes. Okay. And that title came about. I had finished reading The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and then I was watching a movie that came out.
All right.
and I was inspired by the title. Yeah. Well, there was some parallels, because in that, if you really look at The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, you have Arthur Dent, who's laying in front of this lawn tractor. The tractor is trying to tear his house down because they're going to build the highway. And he doesn't realize that the Earth is about to be destroyed. And then he hitchhikes off the planet with an alien, and they go on this journey, and they're trying to get to this location. And every time they try, they seem to be getting further from that, their destiny there. And they ultimately end up where they're supposed to be. And that's where I was inspired by the title, because that's kind of like life. It works the same way if you just let it happen. And I wanted to have that inward journey into the soul. So that's really what inspired the title.
Mm-hmm. So what do you mean about letting it happen? What exactly do you mean about that, letting it happen?
It's trust. It's trust in everything. I've lived without fear or doubt for the last 30 years. And I know that sounds pretty hard to do, and it is. To let go and trust that the people that you're going to meet, the encounters that you have in life, are these soul hitches. And each person that you meet out there has information, just like we're having right now. And we're actually on a soul hitch. And that's what I consider these chance meetings, or it could be just a family member or just a stranger that's out there. And we have these things, and letting go and trusting that your life is going to be okay. Because I've already thought about the worst thing that could ever happen to you.
Yeah, you die.
It could be, right. And what?
Yeah.
I took that to another level. I actually did an experiment for a year, and I tried one-upping every horrible thing. And then I ended up where you just said, death. And the next day, I woke up and I thought of something worse. It was losing your ability to help someone else. And then I realized that can never happen unless I allow it to. So I was free to live from that point forward.
So you're saying for you, the greatest fear would be losing your ability to help somebody else.
Yes.
Is that right? Okay. You know, I kind of want to go into that, but I want to come back to what you started to say about, you know, the soul hitches. So what if I understood you, is you're saying is that you trusted that the universe would more or less lead you to the right people, to those synchronistic, to those magical moments, those remarkable meetings where you meet somebody and it feels like, wow, you just feel inspired. You feel like you're
yeah.
different.
Yeah, so it's
and that's kind
spirits,
of what you call
you know,
a soul hitch. Is that what you
absolutely.
Call a soul hitch?
Yes.
All right.
So I tried to come up with a couple of words or a word that summed up everything you just said, and it's a soul hitch,
uh-huh.
and that's exactly
uh-huh.
it. So you nailed it. That's perfect.
Yeah. Well, that's great because I have a lot of those experiences, you know, but I don't call them soul hitches. Maybe I will now. I like that.
Yeah.
So thank you for that. Yeah, I'm sure I will.
Sure.
You know, I guess the other thing, though, even though you have those moments, I think the harder thing to do is to, I mean, I'm pretty positive and pretty optimistic, but I still have moments of doubt and fear, and I'm just wondering how you transcended that. Yeah, I mean, if I believe what you're saying is that you have, in the last 30 years, you haven't really, are you saying you've had no doubts or fears in the last 30 years?
Correct. And that really stemmed from that divine experience at age 19. So, you know, it's
well,
actually
a
little over 30 now.
What was that experience?
So you want to know?
Maybe I want to
yeah.
have one. What was it?
Well, you have to hit rock bottom first.
Uh-huh.
And I was there. I had
uh-huh.
my feet on what they consider the lowest point of your life. And I had lost several friends to suicide. I had other friends, close friends, got in these horrific car accidents and were killed. And then my girlfriend at the time broke up with me. I was a straight-A student, and then I just let the grades go. And I was almost kicked out of college. I'm just like,
uh-huh.
and no one knew I was struggling. I started
uh-huh.
mixing like prescription drugs and alcohol just to dull the pain because I didn't want to feel
uh-huh.
it anymore. I didn't want to feel that I was lost. I was in such a dark place. And luckily this person, a woman in a restaurant I worked in, and she knew something was wrong. You know, she gave me that 50-yard stare, said, I know what you're doing to yourself, and you need to stop. And
mm-hmm.
she took this little pamphlet out on how to meditate and handed it to me. And she said, this got me through many difficult times in my life, and I think you need to go home and do this tonight. So I was about 3 hours in on the meditation. I read the book. I did everything that the book said to do to meditate and clear your
uh-huh.
mind, focus. And I thought I saw a light, you know, with my mind's eye or whatever they were describing in the book. And I opened my eyes and there was a light on the wall and I couldn't break the beam. And I'm the most analytical, scientific. I'm a programmer. I got 100 on a logic
uh-huh.
exam in college. You know, that's
uh-huh.
me.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm having this thing and I look at this light and I can't break the beam. And that's when I realized it was sort of coming from the wall. And over the course of probably about 15 minutes, it unfolded into an angel while I was looking.
Wow.
And the angel came through in a spirit form. And I'm the most sane person you'd ever meet. And
mm-hmm.
I went nose to nose because she came up and I think she kissed me, although I couldn't feel anything physical in that sense because it was almost like a ghost-like form.
Uh-huh.
I was looking right into her eyes like from 6 inches away. And then she backed up. And I think she healed me. And I know it sounds crazy. I kept this a secret for pretty much the last 30 years.
Uh-huh.
And I told my dad the night my mom passed away. And I decided then, I can't take this to the grave. I know what I saw. And that's why I've lived those last 30 years without fear or doubt. Because
so what did she say to
I
your dad?
I know that I'm held.
What
it was the night, you know, I knew my mom. Yeah, I told him exactly what I just told you, except I added at the beginning, this is the God's honest truth, and I hope you believe me. And I know mom's going to pass away tonight at around 2:30. And
wow.
I know you've been married for 64 years and
whoa.
I don't want to lose you too. And you need to stay here and keep fighting. And he just nodded his head and he had a little smile and he gave me a thumbs up. You know, he had a stroke. He was a hardened World War II veteran. He was on Omaha Beach during D-Day. You know, that's my dad, you know, the ultimate volunteer. And you know, I knew he was going to lose the love of his life, but I knew she wasn't going to be lost. That's what I was trying to tell him. So, yeah, that was, and it's a beautiful experience I had with him, and that's what I wrote in my upcoming book. I wanted to chronicle that story of the night I told my dad about the angel.
And this upcoming book is? This upcoming book is?
Yeah, the working title is Soul Ciphers, Decoding a Life of Hope and Happiness. And I've kind of, you know, as I said, I'm the analytical programmer, and I figured out ways or things that I do that almost like programming myself for happiness and for trust and for belief and faith and hope and all of those things and kindness and how it all relates to everything.
I want to remind our listeners, if you're listening to the Journey On show, Robert Clancy's my guest today. He's recently written The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Soul and his new book that he just described. Now, how do people get your books? What do they need to do?
You can go right to my website, which is guidetothesoul.com, and there's some links on there to the Amazon.com page, and it's also at Barnes & Noble. You can pretty much walk into any bookstore worldwide and order the books, and they'll be delivered there. Because bookstores they can't put every book on the shelf, but you can definitely get it.
Right. You know, my new book that I'm working on should be out hopefully in the summer is called The Soul of Uncertainty.
Beautiful.
You know, there we are, that word soul. And I guess in my 20s, I wrote a book of poetry called Songs and Poems for All Souls. So that word
you
know what I'm curious about
that,
is, for me?
You should republish that.
I know. I never did publish it. I just typed it up and just gave it away, you know. And, but I have to revisit that. But what I'm curious about it is, so you're 19, you hit bottom, and you're working in a restaurant, and this coworker feels there's something going on, and she said, listen, I mean, I know when I first got into meditation, the first time I was taking guitar lessons, and my guitar teacher suggested it, but I wasn't open to it because I liked my life, you know, I liked my life, and, you know, I didn't really want to look at those deeper places, and then, like you, I had a relationship breakup, and that really breaks you open to where all of a sudden you're more vulnerable. And then I met this woman who she had a baby, and the guy deserted her, but she seemed so happy.
Wow.
And she was doing transcendental meditation. And so the next time my guitar teacher suggested that, I got initiated, and this was like in 71. And so you've been a meditator. What path did you get into?
Yeah, I mean, I've just basically lived among everyone else and just traveled the journey and with that knowledge. And that night that happened to me, I talked to myself in the mirror, as crazy as that sounds, because the reflection was the only person that would ever believe what just happened, you know, as far as at that point. And I wanted to run out in my front yard and scream at the top of my lungs, like, heaven is real, you know.
Uh-huh.
I didn't do anything. I kept it in for 5 years before I told the first person. And it was a friend of mine who was terminally ill in the mid-20s of his life. And he needed to know. He needed to know. And that was, like, one of the first people that I told.
So what did you say to him?
I just said, I know, you know, you're coming toward the end of your life, and it wasn't here that long, but I need you to know there's another side, that heaven does exist, and you're going to be fine, and I want you to be my guide on that side, and he's my ego check, so.
Uh-huh.
And we had a pretty deep conversation, and, you know, He was a great person, and I got to see him just a couple days before he passed away. And my friends had that knew him said these incredibly beautiful things about him, but at the time, you know, the cancer had created these immense tumors on his head, and they couldn't visit him. So I actually wrote down all of these beautiful words, and I read them to him. These are things that are said at a funeral, not at, you know, whether the person's still alive.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to read them to him. And that was just such a beautiful experience to share that. And I'm crying. I'm losing it while I'm trying to read these. And he cracks a joke in the middle of it. So I was laughing and crying as hard as you could do on both halves. And I was just like, you know.
Right.
And he said, are you sure they're talking about me? And I just burst out laughing. He did. And it was a great night. And I'll never forget that. You know, that was just something that
what a gift
transcended
for both
me.
Of you.
Yeah.
For both, what a gift for both of you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I understand too that you are. You talked about helping others. That your greatest fear or your the biggest tragedy for you would be not being able to help others. And I know that in your media kit that's a big part of your life is volunteerism.
Yes.
So tell me about that. How did you get there, and exactly what do you mean by it?
Right. Well, that's a great question. And the key thing there is that what I say is the worst thing that can happen to you is losing your ability to help someone else. And it can never happen because it comes down to your legacy. And there's people that have been dead, you know, you think about them, you know, that have literally been dead for hundreds of years, and they're still helping people today by what they left behind. And that's in the form of your children. It's in the form of the people that you've left a mark on their heart. It's everything to go with all of that. So it's all connected. And volunteerism for me started at as early as age 8, I remember my first act of compassion. And my parents were my role models. My mother was a beautician who just made people not only look beautiful, she made them feel beautiful. And my dad was the ultimate volunteer. You know, he really, you know, especially with World War II and doing all those things. So, you know, I had that leadership. I had all those components mixed together.
Mm-hmm. So that was your role model, your model for you to,
yes,
to planted a seed.
Right.
And then how yes, you brought that into your life now?
It's everything. I mean, I thread volunteerism into my life almost like DNA is threaded into into your very fiber of your being. You know, like I volunteer with my son, and he's in the Boy Scouts. So I signed up as a leader, you know, for the troop because that allows me to spend more time with him and see him grow, and also the volunteer aspect of it. So when it becomes just part of your life, it's not an extra thing where people say, I don't have time to volunteer. And for me, it starts with your smile. You know, think about the tool you carry, you know, and it's with you every day, and how often do you use it?
Right. So part of, in a way, what I'm hearing is that your sense of volunteerism is also what some of the Buddhists might call loving kindness.
Yes.
Does that ring a bell?
And basically, yeah. Well, that's the other thing about me, Mark. I haven't read many spiritual books. It's just I've just lived it. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that's great.
People
saying
that's
ideal.
You how do you know that stuff?
That's ideal.
I don't know.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, in other words, just to be loving, to be kind to another person. I mean, that's what you're kind of, I think, also saying that's part of volunteerism. Just to be, you know, and a smile. I'm so big on smiles that sometimes I'd even sign my monthly newsletter, you know, about smiling and laughing. You know, don't forget to smile.
Right.
Don't forget to laugh. And I just think smiling is so infectious, and it's disarming, you know, with other people.
Yeah.
You smile and people are relaxed. And also there's an article I read a long time ago about the science of smiling, to where, you know, when you smile, it actually activates certain muscles, and the nerve endings of these muscles connect with the happy centers in your brain.
Right.
Which is kind of interesting theory. But I like to smile, and it's in the beginning maybe a habit or a discipline, but after a while I love to do it. It's fun.
Yeah, and
I like
you know, here's one that's very profound though. Do you smile when you're alone?
All the time.
I started thinking about that too.
All the time.
And, you know, I smile when I'm alone because I realize I never am. And that's the beauty of it. And it can
change
you.
So tell me more about that. Tell me more about that.
Yeah. You know, think about when you're driving a car, somebody cuts you off and you get frustrated and you go crazy. Smile. And I smile because I think, you know, as far as I look at the physiological side, I know it changes the chemistry in your mind when you're sharing a smile. But when you share a smile with yourself, it's like empowering you to be more of who you really are. And it brings that out. And then it's a tool that you have every day. So you carry that with you. And why not use it for yourself, too? You know, it brightens other people's days. Why not brighten your own? And one of the easiest ways to pay it forward is with kindness and the smile, because it costs nothing and it's worth everything. And that's the beauty of it.
Right. Yeah, I have, you know, one thing I do is whenever I go, there's a health food store nearby that I go there all the time. And I always call people by their name. Because people have a name tag, and the name tags aren't there to report them to management if they screw up, but it's to acknowledge them, say, hey, thanks, Ralph, for helping me. And I always say it. And boy, the next time I come back, people think I'm their best friend. You know, they light up like a Christmas tree. It's amazing. And it makes a difference. It makes me feel good, too, because it's not like I'm going to the health food store to do chores. It's part of my experience of living and just participating. And I think so volunteerism really is about giving more of yourself naturally and effortlessly.
Yes.
To everybody.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what's another side or to volunteerism? You told me about, you know, your son and the Boy Scouts. What's another way you bring volunteerism into your life now?
I volunteer with Junior Achievement, and I teach, through my business, because that ties into being an entrepreneur. And you can go in the classroom and make a difference with that connectivity. For the last 27 years, I've volunteered with Hugh O'Brien Youth Leadership, and that's with high school sophomores. It's called Hugh O'Brien Youth Leadership. Hugh O'Brien was the actor who played Wyatt Earp in the 1950s.
I love Wyatt Earp.
And
I love that program.
What his soul hitch was?
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Tell me.
Yeah.
Huh?
All right. Well, his soul hitch was with Dr. Albert Schweitzer, and humanitarian and Nobel Peace Prize winner. And that's why he created this organization. But I know a lot of people really remember him as that the sheriff. And so tell me about that. I've gotten to see him in action.
I love that. I used to watch it every week.
Yeah, I had the honor of actually going
to... Wait, maybe I'm thinking of... I'm getting mixed up maybe with Maverick.
I don't know. Wyatt Earp, he definitely in the 50s and 60s, he was Wyatt Earp, and it was a Western.
I'm getting it mixed up with James Garner, and Maverick. And then I understand too that he wrote the foreword to one of your books.
Yes, and how did that come about? Volunteer work. Yeah, it's through the volunteer work, and he called me every day for 2 weeks a couple of years ago, and he wanted me to know firsthand why he created the organization. You know, he was getting.
And what was the name of the organization again?
It's Hugh O'Brien Youth Leadership, or HOBY. And why he created this, when he met Schweitzer, the principals behind it, he knew I was one of the few volunteers in the country that's been volunteering for over 25 years. And I got the privilege of listening to him and what really inspired him to do this. And he was really passing the torch on. Because I'm one of the few people with firsthand connectivity and knowledge of on that level of volunteering that many years with it. So that's how that forward came about.
Wow. What an experience he had with Albert Schweitzer, huh? How did he meet him?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a long story. Well, what he did is he was an actor. So he a medical person, and a doctor, and flew to Lambertine, Africa, because he was so inspired by the Nobel Peace Prize and the work that he was doing. So when he got there, his veil lifted, and he said, hey, I'm not really a doctor. And Schweitzer said, well, you're here. And he took his hands and said, well, while you're here, you're going to have to do work. And he put him to work in the hospital helping lepers. And at the end of this, he took his hands and said, now that you've had this experience, what humanity is about and compassion, what are you going to do with these hands when you return back to Hollywood? And he sort of not abandoned his movie career, but, he could have gone on, to be as big as John Wayne and all those guys. He was friends with them all. And he went and created this thing and dedicated the rest of his life to helping youth understand leadership through community service. That's what he did.
Wow. Wow. And you got to know, so you got to know him, and he shared that story with you.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So that's a great soul hitch.
Yeah, and I got the soul hitch.
I love
on,
that
on
phrase.
Hugh O'Brien,
I love that phrase.
You know, just put your thumb out, you're good to go.
Yeah. So we're having a soul hitch right now. I could just see the next time I do the introduction for my show, and I have so and so, we're gonna join us for a great soul hitch. You know?
Yes.
I like that. You know, I mean, instead of why not? But I like that phrase. I mean, it's, I look at sometimes again like a remarkable meeting, magical moment, and I just think that we do have those moments that just seem surreal, and I think as we get to a certain point in our life, and what I mean by point is as we keep doing the work, we start having these experiences more often.
Right.
And I do have the feeling,
absolutely,
like you're talking about, you know, that I'm being guided. In fact, in my book, my new book, I create a wizard, a modern day wizard, and a student, where they have this ongoing dialogue to where, you know, he has a sense he's being guided all the time.
I think we all are,
yeah.
And I feel that. Yeah, you're definitely onto it. So that's it.
Yeah. I mean, I feel that way, and you know, you never know what's going to show up, as Forrest Gump would say.
Exactly.
You know, but if you're not open to that possibility, then you're not going to get to experience it. And again, I just think it's happening quicker. I think there's some type of raised consciousness in the universe here in the world, and we're having more and more people are having more and more of these experiences, these encounters.
Yeah, it's awakenings.
Awakenings. Yeah, absolutely.
And,
absolutely.
You know, that's what happened on December 1st, 2012, when I started my Facebook page. I still, you know, people ask me, how did the angel change me? And I think I'm still figuring that out. But I woke up beyond inspired, and that's when all the words started flowing into me. And I've written like 54,000 inspirational quotes or words.
Wow.
And posted them on this page. So
and you're saying these quotes are things you come up with?
Yes.
That you channel more or less?
Somewhat, yeah, like that. Like I'm a conduit.
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
Yeah. Well, it's been great having you on the show. I mean, it's been a treat. And I want to thank you for taking the time to be on the Journey On show, and also to thank you for doing what you're doing in the world, and how you inspire people, and you continue to make your contribution, change people's lives, you give it to other people. And we have a few more minutes, and
sure.
Are there anything that you want to say that I haven't asked you or talk about that I've neglected?
Well, I have one thing. One is to thank you for what you bring to the world, because I know how every act of kindness matters, and what you're doing is making a difference. So
thank you.
And I want to thank you also for having me on the show and for having this soul hitch, because it was a great experience. The one thing that, you know, it's to live without fear. So I'll leave you with one of the quotes. Of all the journeys in life, you'll encounter valleys of despair and mountains of hope. Just know that the heavens are above the valleys and the mountaintops touch them. And to reach the summit, you just need to take one hope-filled step past your fear, doubt, and worry. And that will bring you everywhere you'll ever need to be. And that's the last thought that I have.
Wow. And that's in your new book?
Yeah, I believe some of these are. You know, I've written, taken pieces of them or used the quotes in there, so they should be. And they're definitely in my upcoming books. I'm going to compile more. The Daily Downloads is the first 350 from my first year of quotes. And I just got 54,000 words. So there's literally like 6 or 7 years worth of stuff there.
Wow.
Crazy.
And this is the Daily.
Yeah,
I love that quote.
Yeah.
You know, in my book, I talk about perfection, and I talk about perfection as that it's not an absolute standard or a place we get to, but it's a dynamic state of being with peaks and valleys.
Yeah.
You know.
Beautiful. And that's exactly it.
Yeah. So it's beautiful. Wow. It's amazing. So every day you come up with one of these ideas.
Yeah, and I can sit here for hours and recite
daily
them to you,
because
the other thing is they're memorized, almost like they're on a hard drive on my head. That's why I call it daily downloads, because I feel like I've downloaded all this information and it's just stuck in my mind.
Wow. So I had a soul hits with the daily download guy.
<Yeah.
laughs> The daily download.
Absolutely.
Soul hits with the daily download.
Bingo.
Okay, well, our time is over, so it's been great. You know, having you, and our show is actually over now. So,
well, thank you so much.
Yep. Yeah, it's great having you, and I'd like to share my book with you and maybe get your support on it when it's done. I'm going to be having the advanced reader copy in hopefully by the middle of May. I'm not sure, but that's our target.
Excellent.
You know.
Yeah, and also I want to share your show and my interview, obviously, on my page. There's actually over 320,000 people now on my Facebook page.
So I'll send you. So let me get your
crazy
information. Okay. So it's what?
Yeah.
First of all, what is your mailing address?
My mailing address is, you can send to my office. It's Spiral Design Studio, Spiral Design Studio, and that's 135 Mohawk Street.
Uh-huh.
Cohoes, Cohoes, New York.
Cohoes,
yes. Cohoes.
Like coho salmon, like Cho.
Yep.
E-S-E.
O-E-S. O-E-S.
Okay. Coho.
O-E-S.
Coho.
O-E-S.
E-S. The last, how many letters is in that word?
I think it's five.
Okay, so
Cohoes. So six, yeah, six letters.
All right, Cohoes, New York, and zip.
Yep. 12047.
Uh huh. And what's your email?
It's robert@guidetothesoul.com. And definitely send me the information so I can promote it. And I usually make a little promo and put it out there.
Sure.
If you put it on, if the best thing to do is actually if you put it on a Facebook post, if you have that, and share or just let me know when it's posted. If I share that post, it'll get you a huge bump on your page.
Uh huh. All right. Yeah.
So
I can share this link on Facebook, and I can email it to you too.
Yes, and then let
Link
me know when
be
you
ready
post
in
it on your
few
Facebook.
Minutes.
So, yeah, but when you post on your Facebook, if I share your Facebook page with my audience, it's going to help you increase your reach.
Sure. Okay. And
so it's the reciprocity.
Cool. Well, let me do this. Let me do that. Let me go ahead and I'll post it on my Facebook page, and then I'll. I guess we need to become friends on Facebook, right? First, or
no, not necessarily. If you have it on a public, it looks like you have a Facebook page, right? You don't. Not
I have
just
two.
Your personal
I have it under my name and under Inspire Possibility. So I'll put it. I
if
think
you
it's
put
automatically.
It on Inspire Possibility.
Yeah. Okay.
Put it on that one, and I will share off of that page to mine. And that will get you the bump, because we want to increase your public traffic to that page.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
And then
that'd
I'll write
be great.
Something up and do that.
Cool.
Yeah.
And like I say, I'll send you a copy to The Soul of Uncertainty. And, you know, it's probably going to be, I'm thinking middle of May. And then I'm trying to get, you know, like advanced praise for it. That's what I did.
Right.
My
yeah,
last
no problem.
Book was Dancing on the River. So,
okay.
But anyway, no, this is great. This is a great interview. I mean, a lot of interviews I do are really, really good. Not all of them, though. And you know, Dia said you guys will have a great time, so I trusted her.
Yeah, excellent. Well, the other thing is, are you? I don't know if you've heard of the Wellness Universe, but you might want to join that. It's free to join. You just go to the Wellness Universe. It's thewellnessuniverse.com, and I can email this to you when you send me through something. And you just fill out the there's a form, and then they have a forum, and there's probably about 700 or 800 wellness people. They help and support each other in promoting, you know, books or whatever they're doing that's doing a positive thing out there. So that's all it is. It's all free. So
cool. Wow. Thank you. Yeah, I'll do that too. No. I've been doing the show now for a few years. It's fun.
Excellent.
And I do. I really do love that phrase, soul hitch. I mean, that is a nice way of just describing what I did in a lot of words. You know, it is.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. It is true. You know, we do have more of these meetings. You know.
Yeah, and I don't even know how I came up with that phrase. I think it's just because I woke up and it was already written. It just said, those are soul hitches, and that's what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, it is, because, I was thinking about, like, my new book, The Soul of Uncertainty. But then I think about when I was in my 20s, the thing is songs and poems for all souls, you know, where I thought of that 40, 50 years ago, you know. So it's... that word is, but a lot of people sometimes, you know, just think of that word with a heaviness. And so in my new book, I'm trying to kind of, and uncertainty with a heaviness, I'm trying to, you know, I give a whole totally different perspective, you know. All right. Well, listen, I'll let you go. Thanks again for being on the show. And
thank you.
Yeah. And I'll send you that link.
Excellent. I look forward
All
to
right.
it, and I will definitely promote that out. So,
great.
All right. Have a good night. Yep. Take
Thanks.
Care.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. All right. Bye-bye.
As a life coach and life discovery guide, Mark made his career change in 2001. The lessons, insights, and unique questions are provided for you in the book Dancing on the River, Navigating Life's Changes. Go to Amazon.com now and buy a copy. And tune in to Inspire Possibilities Show on PBS Radio every other Wednesday, 6 p.m. Station 1. I believe in motivation. We all talk about change, but we all get sick from telling ourselves the lies. Promises to ourselves that go unfulfilled. Usually we do this to ourselves daily. When we have a habit we want to break or change. What sort of impact do you think this has on your subconscious, your conscience, and inevitably your physical well-being? You need a person who can stimulate you, motivate you, can cause radical thought, thinks outside the box, and discovers more within you. A person who can inspire you. What you need is a life discovery guide. Let's get acquainted. I'm Mark Susnow. It's time to start the process of real discovery together. Go to my website, inspirepossibility.com, to learn more. And let's get acquainted. Voice of Mark Susnow provided by an imposter. An impersonator of Mark Susnow. An actor doing Mark Susnow impersonation. Voice of Mark Susnow provided Fuck, what do I say there?
Hi, everybody. I'm Mark Susnow. a production of InspirePossibility.com, your partner in creating new possibilities in your life. There's no better time than now to begin. You're the one you've been waiting for. But sometimes we just need some inspiration and encouragement. With that in mind, each week I invite individuals whom I consider to be cutting-edge thought leaders, those individuals who are committed to expanding our perception of what we might think is possible, to have a conversation with me and discuss what they're up to and what moves them. And with that in mind, I invited Deborah Diamond, who's an expert and an author on near-death experiences, and she's quite a celebrity in her own right, and she's been a radio host. She was a money manager at one time in Wall Street, and then she had a spiritual awakening and has written this book that a lot of people are talking about and answering the question, what happens after a near-death experience? So welcome, Deborah. Welcome to the Inspire Possibility Show.
Thank you, Mark. It's a pleasure to be here.
I got to admit, I was intrigued when I saw the note from your publicist regarding your book and the topic, and I know that a lot of people do talk about near-death experiences, but nobody knows exactly what they are. And perhaps you can kind of tell us what you mean by near-death experience.
Sure, Mark. So, the science has focused pretty much on the elements to describe the near-death experience. And when I say elements, it's the light, the tunnel, the life review, those sorts of things that people talk about and that are, what they see on television shows and in the movies. And, those elements have a lot of visual appeal. They're dramatic, and I can understand why they would be, why people think they're a big part of the experience. But the truth is that the near-death experience is really not about the elements. It's about if you come back transformed, unable to go back to the way that you were, that's what really defines the experience. Because there are many people who don't have any of the elements. They don't experience any of the elements. They don't go through a tunnel. They don't see a light. But they come back transformed, and their lives are turned upside down. These are normal, everyday people like you and I, and they find that they just can't go back to the way that they used to be. So it's a dramatic experience, and, there is some talk about near-death experiences. I mean, it's a hot topic today, so there are books about people and personal narratives. I went through the tunnel. I saw the light. This is what happened to me. But very few people talk about what happens afterwards. People just don't talk about spiritually transformative experiences because they don't want to be embarrassed. They don't want to be ridiculed. They think their friends are going to think they're crazy or they're just not going to believe them.
Yeah, Deborah, let me ask you a question. What I'm confused about is, and maybe we can kind of nail this down, what qualifies as a near-death experience? I mean, what exactly goes on? I mean, what if you had, like, heart surgery? Is that a near-death experience?
Well, not necessarily. There's been a feeling that near-death experiences are equated with trauma. When I was writing the book and I was telling people about what I was doing, they would say, "Oh, how long was that person dead for?" And the truth is, you don't have to be clinically dead to have a near-death experience. You don't have to experience trauma to have a near-death experience, although many cases are the result of trauma, drowning, a heart attack, surgery. But, again, it's more, it's defined by IANS, the International Association of Near-Death Experiencers. They have associations for everything these days. So it's defined by IANS as, becoming transformed in such a way that you're not able to go back to the life that you led before. And there are a variety of transformations that people go through, and I talk about some of those in the book. The book focuses on cognitive and physiologic transformations.
Right. And let me just come back to my question is, I guess what I'm saying is I understand about the transformation, but what qualifies, because people every day can have a transformation through a meditative experience or a out-of-body experience without the trauma. So what qualifies where you get into this category that it's a near-death experience? I mean, what has to happen physiologically?
Yeah, it's permanent. I mean, that's the big difference. There are all sorts of spiritual transformations, you're right, that people have that take place, you know, through hallucinogens or through meditation or, you know, even through drumming or chanting. But those are temporary. They're not permanent. And in a near-death experience, the transformation is permanent. And, you know, there are things like, you know, from a physiological point of view, things like being sensitive to light, being sensitive to heat, being sensitive to noise. 65 or 75% of people who've had near-death experiences end up divorced because their spouses say, you know, honey, if you just stayed the way you were, we were fine. They, you know, they just are different. There are people who, you know, many of them come back more spiritual. It's a hard thing to measure because, you know, it's hard to know how spiritual they were before versus afterwards. Many people become psychic or mediumistic. So there's a whole range of after effects from near-death experiences that, you know, that are permanent and stick with the person forever. They can't go back. You know, there's just no turning the clock back. So I spoke to people when I was working on the book who had had other kinds of experiences, but they weren't permanent. And in order to sort of get into that space or that zone that's, you know, particularly unique and spiritual, they would have to, let's say, take more hallucinogens or try to keep meditating or, you know, and even that, even that it doesn't work. Yeah, so it's a unique confluence of having your consciousness thrown out of your body. And, oh, by the way, it's not something that people can bring on themselves. It's very much in the hands of the universe. So, you know, the philosopher, the Harvard philosopher William James said in 1904 that there are four characteristics of a noetic experience, and one of them is that you can't bring it on yourself, and if anyone says they can, they're lying. So it's just not something you can, you know, you can do. People have said to me, geez, you know, how can I have one of those? They sound so great. And I think, wow, I guess I didn't do a very good job of explaining this. I mean, this is not something you really want.
So that's more or less. So what are some situations that occurs in somebody like, I mean, I understand the after effect, but as you're saying is, I guess what I'm saying is physiologically, there has to be like some time of incidence where you lose consciousness. Would that be fair to say?
Generally, you know, I would say in most of these cases, the cases that I interviewed, yes, people had their consciousness leave their bodies, you know, but just having an OBE, an out-of-body experience alone, doesn't qualify as a near-death experience. You know, the experiences were defined by Raymond Moody in 1975 when he wrote Life After Life. And that's when he set out these seven or eight elements of the near-death experience. And then Bruce Grayson at the University of Virginia, who studies also, you know, near-death experiences, tacked on another eight elements for a total of 16 elements. And this is how science defines near-death experiences, according to these elements. And if you go to visit one of these scientists, they'll give you a checklist to check off. And, you know, did you go through a tunnel? Check. Did you go through, see a light? Check. And if you check off enough boxes, they'll say you had a near-death experience. The problem is there are many people who have these experiences who didn't see the light or go through a tunnel. So, but maybe they've had, you know, they had some of the other elements, or maybe they had very few elements, but they had very rich experiences. And I found in the research that many of the cases asked me, you know, they said to me, you know, I didn't go through a tunnel. Was my experience valid? Because, you know, now they're, you know, people are thinking, well, this is how the media has set it up, and this is how science has set it up, so this must be what defines a near-death experience. But if you stand back and look at the big picture, this is a very young, not very well-researched field. You know, there are two kinds of books for the most part, and then my book, which is there aren't any other books really on the after effects. So, but there are two kinds of books that have discuss near-death experience. One is the scientists who say, you know, it's defined by the elements, and the other are the personal narratives, somebody who writes their own book and says, this happened to me. So, you know, no one has really delved deeper to say, well, what's going on here? What contributes to a near-death experience? What happens to these people? What is it about their consciousness that changes? What's the setup? You know, we found that there are certain predispositions for a near-death experience.
Such as?
Many of these people. So, well, let me just back up for 1 second. So when I did my research, I interviewed these folks and I gave them questionnaires because I have a background, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, I have a background in research. I was on Wall Street. I did research and I did conventional research for some part of this study, but I'm also a psychic and a medium. So I also decided that I would do readings on these folks because wherever they went in their NDE was a place that science couldn't touch. And I could give them questionnaires and I could interview them, but we still wouldn't get at the heart of, you know, what happened. They had questions themselves, you know, questions like, who were the beings of light I met, or how come my grandmother gave me my life review, or how come I didn't have a life review? So, you know, these were questions that if I gave them a questionnaire, they couldn't answer. They didn't know the answer. I certainly didn't know the answer. So we also did readings to see if we could come up with more information. And in the readings, you know, there were lots of other things that came up, including a certain predisposition for the NDE. So many people had a pattern of abuse, childhood abuse. Many people were involved in intention and manifestation in terms of their NDEs. Now, you can't really manifest an NDE, but many of these people seem to be almost in training for the experience. So years before the experience started, they were maybe pursuing a more spiritual path, or they were practicing yoga, or they became vegetarians, this sort of thing. So some of them outright asked for the NDE.
Yeah. So are you saying then that people that are on a spiritual path are more likely to have one of these near-death experiences?
Well, we don't know that. You know, there's not enough data available yet. You know, there's 15 million people in the U.S. alone who claim to have had a near-death experience.
Wow.
And the number's probably even higher because many people have these experiences and they're not familiar with the term NDE, so they don't even know what happened to them. So it's, you know, lots of people, and the research is extremely limited. You know, I mean, there's several thousand cases that have been disclosed, and an even fewer number that have been researched. So there's just not enough data available yet, you know, to have all the answers.
So let me, you know, what I'm curious about, you said there's 15 million people. How did you come up with that number?
That's actually the result of a Gallup poll survey from the 90s. And so, that's the most recent survey. So, you know, that survey is dated at this point. And
so,
So
how did Gallup define what a near-death experience was? Are you familiar with that? Or?
I don't, you know, I can't tell you exactly. That's a statistic that's commonly quoted by, you know, everyone in the industry.
Uh-huh. So again, your book is The Near-Death Experience. And how does your book differ from, I know you talked about it a little bit. First of all, how do people get your book?
Oh, okay. So
I mean, I'm sure people are going to want to read your book, and because I know your book is one of the latest and most informative books on this subject. And I know that there are a lot of people that would be interested in getting your book. So tell us the title and... Do you have a website for the book, or how do people get a hold of you and all that stuff?
Yeah, sure. So the name of the book is Life After Near Death, Miraculous Stories of Healing and Transformation in the Extraordinary Lives of People with Newfound Powers. The book is available, you know, at Barnes & Noble, the retail stores. It's available online at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. It's available on my website, DeborahDiamondAuthor.com. So, you know, you can go to any of those places and order the book. We have a Facebook page, Life After Near Death, that, you know, listeners are welcome to like, and that way they can keep up on, you know, all the news about near-death experiences and any events and get some inspirational messages. So, you know, there's a couple different websites and venues for the book. And how does the book differ? Well, as I said earlier, you know, there's been very little research into what happens after a near-death experience. But particularly, this book focuses on two types of after effects, cognitive and physiologic. And the reason I chose those two after effects is because I was looking for after effects that were demonstrable and they were irrefutable. So, you know, as I said earlier, there are many people who come back and they say, I'm more spiritual now, or I'm psychic now. Well, I can't prove that. You know, I don't know how spiritual you were before, you know, so I can't prove that. But, you know, and psychic, hard to prove. So, but there are people who come back with gifts and abilities that they didn't have beforehand that are medically documented or otherwise documented. So they're irrefutable. So what do I mean by that? Well, there are people who come back with newfound musical abilities, people who didn't play instruments before, didn't have any musical ability before, you know, who are now musicians. And they dedicate their life to it because these abilities and gifts present as compulsions. So mathematical abilities. There's a lady in the book who gets quantum physics downloads, and she has 32 bins of paper in her closet filled with these equations. And she's a former hairdresser, so she is really not, you know, equipped for this. There are people who come back, you know, with artistic abilities. And then on the physiologic side, people with enhanced vision, enhanced hearing, higher IQ, and these are all documented. You know, people who had their vision checked before and after, their IQ checked before and after.
Right.
So,
you know, Deborah, what I'm still not clear about is that I'm still not clear about the type of thing that has to happen to people. I understand about the after effect, but what about what qualifies? I mean, you're saying that a lot of it is what happens afterwards, but like, does someone have to lose consciousness to have a near-death experience, according to your definition?
What appears to happen is that their consciousness is flung out of their body. You know, that seems to be a key factor, you know, in these experiences. And, you know, there's lots of other issues as well. But the issue is, Mark, that this all takes place in a realm that we don't understand and we don't have the language for. So, you know, trying to pin it down to, you know, here's five things on Earth that we can ascribe to it, it doesn't work that way. Because, you know, by doing readings on these people, I was able to get closer and, you know, and to see some of the things that happened to them and go along with them on their NDEs. But still, you know, what we have to recognize is this is not a realm at all like a realm, you know, a 3D realm that we're familiar with. And it doesn't operate by the same rules. And, you know, some of it is still a mystery and not meant for us to know.
Yeah, it sure is, huh? What happens after we die or near death? It's kind of, in a way, what happens after we die is a mystery. And what we're saying is we can have some experiences that aren't quite death, but they're near death, that we have the same mystery, the same unknown, the same questions and experiences. And so
one thing is that, you know, the consciousness survives. I mean, that's really the bottom line from these experiences, from doing, you know, working with these cases and writing the book, is that consciousness does survive the physical body. And through these near-death experiences, we see that these folks' consciousness, you know, while they were, now some of them, you know, were clinically dead and others weren't, but their consciousness was still very much alive and very vivid, and they were able to take in things and see things, not only, you know, that were right before them, but, you know, elsewhere, all over the world. That's called a veridical experience, where you're able to know things that you shouldn't be able to know, but that they're true. So, you know, consciousness appears to have its own life and embodiment separate from the physical body. So when we pass, you know, our physical body dies, but the essence that is us, the battery that powers us, the energy that is us, continues to live. And that's our consciousness. And in a near-death experience, that consciousness appears to be flung out of your body and goes out into the universe or into this realm that we don't really understand, but it's not Earth. And it has, you know, very unusual experiences out there, experiences that we can't have when we're weighted down by a physical body. You know, we all have consciousness. Everybody has consciousness. Some people seem to have more than others, and some don't seem to have any at all. But NDEers, after their NDEs, seem to be coming back with too much consciousness. You know, it's like their consciousness gets flung out of their body and enhanced, and then they come back to Earth, and they come back with too much of this consciousness, and, you know, it makes it very unwieldy. So it's, you know, they come back with their energy altered or their consciousness altered. So wherever they're going, you know, they're going to a place that seems to alter their energy and their consciousness.
Right. I want to read something that one of the reviewers read about your book, of Jeffrey Long. He's the author of the New York Times bestselling book, Evidence of the Afterlife. You won't want to miss this exceptional book. Deborah Diamond is uniquely qualified. She was a high-powered Wall Street money manager who walked away to pursue a life of spirituality and purpose. So what I'm wondering about is what got you to walk away from that life to pursue what you're doing now?
So, well, it wasn't really part of my plan, Mark. Well, we're not really in control. You know, we like to think we're in control, but there's, you know, there are other forces that are, you know, the universe is pretty powerful. When I was in the investment business, I always knew things. I didn't know how I knew these things, but I just always kind of knew things. And my boss would say, you know, Deborah, you have good instincts. And I thought, yeah, I guess that's what it is. I guess I must just have good instincts, because nobody in the investment business talks about being psychic. It just never comes up. So in 2008, I thought, you know, I have pretty good intuition, and I decided to take an intuition development class in New York. In this class, I had a spiritually transformative experience. You know, we were doing a few exercises, low-key exercises, and I was getting everything. And then we took a break, and when we came back, the teacher said, now we're going to do a seance. And that was really not what I was there for. But I thought, well, you know, it was a weekend class. It was still only Saturday morning. I'll just kind of do this exercise, and then we'll go on to the next one. So she put us in a meditative state and told us that, you know, if we saw anything afterwards, saw anyone, to let her know, and she would tell us what to do. And I thought, well, that's fine. That doesn't pertain to me, because I'm not going to see anyone. And I meditated, and she took us out of the meditation, and she said, does anyone see anyone? And I looked around the room, and everyone was looking at each other, and I raised my hand. And she said, yes, Deborah, what do you see? And I said, I see about 50 people. So this is what happened to me. You know, I had this profound experience. I was seeing people who were relatives of mine who had passed. I was seeing people who went with other people in the room. And then I was just seeing some random people. And the teacher said, you know, if you see someone, let's say, in the corner of the room, that means that they probably go with someone sitting in that corner. And I said, well, I do see someone in the corner. And she asked me to describe him. And I said, he is Hispanic, and he's got dark hair, part of the middle, handlebar mustache, big white teeth. And as I described him, a woman sitting in the corner began to sob. And she said, I can identify him. That's my fiancé. He died 2 years ago.
Wow.
So that woman said to me, if I show you pictures on my cell phone during the break, can you identify him? And I said, sure, because he was plain as day to me. So during the break, she flipped through these pictures, and I said, there, that's him. And she said, that's my fiance. And she, you know, she verified he had passed away 2 years ago. Now, she believed in all this. She had wanted to hear from him and had not. So she was very grateful to me for making this connection. And she thanked me, and she gave me a big hug. So now, I was overwhelmed and frightened, but remember, I used to work on Wall Street, so there aren't a lot of thank yous on Wall Street, and there's no hugs either. So when she gave me, you know, she gave me this hug and thanked me, you know, I was like, oh, I did something profound for somebody. I did something meaningful. So even though I was pretty overwhelmed by the whole thing, it did register on me that this was something powerful. I drove home to Baltimore. I live in Baltimore. That class was in New York. I drove home to Baltimore that Sunday night, and on my way home, I called one of my sons. I have three sons, but one of them scores pretty well in logic tests, and I called him, and I told him what happened, And he didn't say anything, but when I was all done, he said, well, that makes sense. You know, we're just energy, and the energy has to go someplace. So that kind of gave me a context for understanding what happened. Now, eventually, I ended up going to Taos, New Mexico. I don't know if you've ever been out there, but I had been there several times in the past.
And I want to go there. Summer.
Oh, it's a great place. It's fantastic. So I went out there that summer to paint, but what happened was I didn't come back, and that's pretty common in Taos. You know, if you talk to the locals and you say, how long have you been here? They say, oh, you know, I came for a weekend 20 years ago. So, you know, I ended up staying there, and that's where I began to unpack this energy that had, you know, this gift that Spirit had given me, and that's where I began to work with the energy, and that's kind of what happened to me, and that's how I was, you know, eventually led into doing work on NDE. Someone asked me to do a reading for a well-known NDEer, and he had some very unusual abilities as a result of his NDE, and you know, I started thinking about his abilities, and I just wondered, how did he get them, and what was he supposed to do with them, and what about other NDEers? And I looked up, I Googled NDE After Effects, and I found out that there wasn't any research done, and I decided, well, you know, I guess I'll have to do the research. And it's not that far-fetched, because, as I said, I used to do research on Wall Street, so, you know, not only that, but on, you know, very early-stage, cutting-edge companies. So I knew how to do original research. So that's how this all got started. And, you know, originally I thought, you know, I would just delve into these buckets of After Effects, but I found that in the research I was very quickly taken into this whole realm of consciousness and intention and manifestation and, you know, lots of subjects that, you know, we just don't have the answers to. And, but that's where Spirit decided to take me.
So what's next for you?
I am working on another book. Right now that also has to do with consciousness and an experience that I had down in the Yucatan where I went down to the Yucatan to a number of the Mayan sites to do some readings. And, you know, that led me into that. Again, I had an outcome that was a little bit different than what I expected. So that's the book I'm working on now.
Do you have a working title for that?
You know, I don't, but I'm up. You know, I'm game for suggestions.
That's always sometimes, you know, so hard to come up with a title, right? I mean, I don't know. My first book,
okay, well,
it,
then you come
I,
up with
it
the title,
forever.
And the publisher changes it. So.
Yeah, second book, it came to me, The Soul of Uncertainty, uh-huh. That I'm working on now. But titles are so tricky. So I want to thank you, Deborah, for being a guest on the Inspire Possibility Show. You've kind of illuminated our eyes in a subject that is very, as you would say, mysterious, and maybe not so mysterious by people that study this and have experiences with it. But I know for most people it is, and thank you for your willingness to take a stand and your courage to leave the career that you had in Wall Street and to kind of follow your soul. Calling this call that you had inside to go in a different direction. I know that it takes a lot of courage, and I think more and more people are doing it, but a lot of times they need people that kind of light the way what you're doing, and I want to thank you for being willing to do that.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Mark. You're very kind, and I enjoyed being on the show, so thanks again.
Thank you, and I want to remind our listeners, you've been listening to the Inspire Possibility Show, and our guest today was Deborah Diamond, the author of Life After Near-Death Experiences. Next week, we're going to have another fascinating, interesting guest, and be sure to tune in. So we'll talk to you then. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Inspire Possibility Show with Mark Susnow. To learn more about Mark Susnow, go to inspirepossibility.com and click on the contact button. Schedule a complimentary visit with Mark or email him at mark@inspirepossibility.com. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine Imagine the possibilities. Imagine. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine. Imagine. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine. Imagine the possibilities.